Exclusively on cable TV, CRN,
the Cable Radio Network,
the radio channel.
And good evening. My name is Don Ecker, and hello to Dave Aaron and the 90s channel, who's out there right now watching us for a special cable TV program. Tonight on the Cable Radio Network, and if you've been joining us here each week, you know that we have live guests and some of the best researchers, investigators, and notables in the UFO arena. And tonight's show, I'd like to mention, is being brought to us by UFO Magazine, the world's best and foremost publication on one of mankind's most least understood problems, and that is unidentified flying objects. Well, my guest this evening is a gentleman that I've had the pleasure of knowing for a number of years. He wrote what I consider to be one of the most important books yet to be written about this subject. And the name of that book is The Gods of Eden. The gentleman's name, William Bromley. Mr. Bromley will tell you here, and in a moment when we have him on the air, how this book came about. But basically, he was writing a thesis on third-party intervention through on human conflict throughout history. In other words, if there were two warring factions, the third party that would come in and deal with both of them without the other's knowledge. And during the course of this absolutely brilliant historical thesis, he kept coming across something that at first he didn't believe, and then he quit several times in disgust and finally decided to go through with it. And that thing that kept popping up over the thousands of years of human history, you've guessed it, UFOs. And when this book was first published a number of years ago, I had the very distinct pleasure of writing a book review on it for UFO Magazine, and we carried the ads of this wonderful book for a long time in the pages of those magazines, and we were proud to do it. And just recently, none other than Avon Books went to Mr. Bromley and told him they would be interested in publishing this, and it is just now coming out on bookshelves around the country. If you have not yet read The Gods of Eden, I strongly advise that you do it. And after tonight's show, I think you're going to know why. And, Bill, are you there?
Yeah, I'm done.
Well, thank you for joining us. I tried several times to get you on the show. And after Avon, I guess, grabbed your option, you agreed.
Yeah, that's right. I'm pleased to be on. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, you're more than welcome. This show, Bill, goes from coast to coast. And I know in the pages of UFO Magazine, we've talked about your thesis many times. And I guess one of the first ways that we can start discussing this subject this evening is to find out what it was that got you lit to start on this project initially.
Well, I've always been a little bit of, I guess, a social reformer, you could say. I've always had that orientation. And I think nobody would really argue with me that warfare is probably one of the biggest problems that we have as a race. So I kind of got interested in the Machiavellian model of history and looking at the fact that very often when you have a war, you have somebody outside the actual conflict who's benefiting from it, from the existence of the war in some way. A real obvious example would be like an armaments manufacturer. They make money selling their arms, no matter who's fighting or what they're fighting for. So they're benefiting from the mere existence of a conflict. And if you go through history, you find the same thing in the political arena. For example, when England and its colonies here in the United States were had their confrontation, France benefited just from the existence of that conflict, and therefore it actually was over here in the colonies trying to stir up some rebellion against England, of course, back in the 1700s. So what I thought is that this would make a very interesting treatise to look at this phenomenon and go all the way back in history and just to see where this has come about and go back into some of the older wars just to see what kind of people and what kind of interests have instigated or have been like an outside party in conflict. And what I was really looking for would be to look for common denominators. Like, I was expecting to find essentially a monetary motive throughout the whole thing. And certainly that is there. You're going to find that as part of it. But what I kept bumping into...
Well, as a matter of fact, when you speak, Bill, about a monetary motive, one of the main points that you keep pointing out time and time again has to do with the Federal Reserve banking system.
Yeah.
And how that began and what roots actually go all the way back into Europe with that idea and concept.
Oh, yeah. The Federal Reserve Bank actually represents a certain way of creating and issuing money that began well before the Federal Reserve actually began. It began on the model of the Bank of Amsterdam, and now we're going back into like the 1600s and the 1500s. So the genesis actually goes back several hundred years, and then country after country went ahead and adopted that model. So that's one of the things that I talk about. And listeners may wonder, what does this have to do with UFOs? But a lot of these... what I talk about is that a lot of the institutions that we have go back much further than we realize, and that you really trace them way back, you find roots in some rather unusual things, like in various religions and so forth, and those religions in turn have roots in this phenomenon that we today identify as the UFO phenomenon. But of course it was going on back
then. And we have, let me point out, we have to mention that as far as a control system, traditionally throughout all of humankind's history, religion has been very often that control system.
Oh, it has been, yeah. I mean, religion, I think there's a valid basis for religion. There does seem to be a spiritual reality, and in fact, I have a belief, a personal belief in a supreme being. But you can use knowledge, or you can use something like that as a control system, and I think to a large extent, many religions have been used that way, and it does tie in to the UFO phenomenon historically.
Well, you had told me on several occasions when we met before, Bill, that one of the individuals that absolutely sparked your interest in this subject was none other than Zachariah Sitchin.
Yeah, he's a fabulous writer, and in fact, I recommend all of his books. He's written five that I know of so far.
Well, he was just this weekend out here in Pasadena, speaking and lecturing at the Whole Life Expo, and he has a sixth book in his Earth Chronicles series coming out. But the point that I wanted to make, and of course this is your show this evening, not Zachariah's, but he figures into this very prominently because at the very beginning of your book, when you talk about the very beginning of humankind and the absolute and actual gods of Eden, you fall right into Sitchin's thesis that it's very likely that humankind was the result of a biogenetic manipulation, and that humankind has been dealing, even though it was usually on a very covert level, with these beings ever since. How long did it take you to come to that realization and accept it? I mean, this goes against practically everything we've ever been taught or believed throughout all of our lives. And I'm sure the fundamentalist religions would take great offense at that concept.
Yeah, but you know, the interesting thing is that most religions really do talk about an extraterrestrial involvement in human affairs. They talk about angels and a god and the idea that they come from heaven. In other words, they come from a place off of Earth.
Right, but they never use the term ET.
No, that's very true. I think it takes a researcher such as us to go ahead and maybe make that connection, which I think is there when you really look at what people were reporting back then. But, going back to the research of Sitchin, I think he's done a fabulous job in terms of translating and interpreting some of the old creation stories, especially from the old Mesopotamian civilizations, which were, they're around 3,000 to 5,000 B.C., that they talked about essentially bioengineering, and that story then became the basis of the biblical creation story, the Adam and Eve story.
Yes.
What a lot of people don't know about the Adam and Eve story is that it's actually rooted in the old symbols, like the tree with the two fruits and the snake, actually go back to texts that existed before the Bible was even written.
Well, here we come to the first big signpost. When we speak about symbols and so forth, in your work, you have taken this concept and you have expanded and researched it, in my opinion, absolutely beautifully. And you came to the conclusion, and it's something that I certainly will not argue with, that there have been secret societies, practically from the very beginning, mystery schools, if you will, that have guided and in some cases helped and in many cases hurt the human beings that labored under them. Is that true?
Yeah, I think, in fact, that they play a very important role. Even today, you'd be surprised at the role that this type of organization plays in some of the strife that's going on in Europe and elsewhere. And they change over time. In other words, they will have a period when they're active and when they play a role in instigating revolution or warfare, and then they tend to die down. But initially, they began back in old Mesopotamia. We go back all the way that far again, where they actually began as a very benign type of religion, where sort of a practical way of attaining spiritual salvation through practical and non-mystical means. And so the original intent was, in fact, the salvation of the freedom of the human race from some of the bad effects of these extraterrestrials who they said were flying around and being involved in human society.
Okay, Bill, let me give out our phone number. I'm sure there are many people out there that will have questions about this. My name is Don Ecker. My guest this evening is William Bromley, author of The Gods of Eden, a book that has just recently been re-released through Avon Books. It should be available. Is it available on the shelves now, Bill?
I think it is. I've seen it in a couple bookstores, but I think it's still in the process of being released.
Okay. And if you pick up a copy of The Gods of Eden and then you look on the back, you're going to see a quote from a book review, and it states, "A truly momentous work, a must read." And yours truly wrote that several years ago when I...
Yeah, I have to thank you for that, Don. That was great.
When I originally reviewed this book, I think that along with Zachariah Sitchin's collective, known as The Earth Chronicles, The Gods of Eden is one of the most important books that take a look over the entire subject and time span of UFOs. And if you live in the 818-213 or 310 area codes, my guest this evening, William Bromley, The Gods of Eden. And now back to the show. Bill, one of the things that you mention in here, and of course, ideally I would love to be able to just spend the next 3 or 4 hours talking to you about this, but one of the things that you mention, which is much closer to today, than, for example, the ancient Mesopotamian, is our own American Revolution. And you pointed out something that I knew from my college history that many people may not realize, but the seeds of the American Revolution were probably started at least 20 years prior to the outbreak of actual fighting here between the American colonists and the British and their German mercenaries. When George Washington, who was a colonial officer under the British, fired a couple of shots that literally ignited not only the French-Indian War here, but also warfare throughout Europe, which caused not only great loss of life, but economic destruction of whole economies. And it all came down to roost. Do you think that there was a plan behind that?
Well, it's hard to say. It's interesting that he then led the opposition to Britain after the whole thing got started, because what happened after the French and Indian War, which then erupted as the 7 Years' War in Europe, is that essentially the British economy got bankrupted from all of that. And so they had to go ahead and start levying taxes in the colonies. That was one of their ideas. Taxes were already so high in Britain that they really thought they couldn't levy any more over there, so they started going ahead and trying to levy them here in the colonies. And then, of course, when the colonists said, well, you can't do that, and they started doing the hue and cry that you can't raise taxes. And, of course, George Washington then turned around and joined that group, and then he went ahead and led that group. Whether it was deliberately planned or whatever, I really couldn't say. It's just one of those curious little episodes in history that I do remark.
And you've absolutely pointed out many, many of them. Well, I'm sure there are a lot of listeners right now that are saying to themselves, okay, that's fine, that's interesting, but what in the world does that have to do with UFOs?
Well, I think what people need to understand is we've always had this concept about UFOs that we're down here, they're up there flying around, and somehow they're not really related to anything that's going on particularly, except maybe they abduct people now and again and do some experiments and let them go, and that's about it. Kind of like they're just sort of watching us.
Ho-hum? Kind of ho-hum?
Yeah, that's right, and I think that's generally the perception that people have of the UFO phenomenon. What I discovered, and I think what a lot of researchers have discovered, is that there's a lot stronger connection between what's happening here on Earth and that phenomenon in the skies. In fact, I think the UFO phenomenon is probably the missing link or the missing piece of the puzzle to really explain what's happening with us and why we're having so much troubles on Earth. And people say, well, gosh, how can you make that connection? And the thing is, when you really start digging in the historical records and when you start seeing the connection between UFOs and religion, which we still see today, for example, some of, I think Dr. Light points it out real well, the connection between UFOs and religious visions, apparitions, that type of thing. When you look at some of the political beliefs of very radical groups here on Earth and their connection to the UFO phenomenon, you'd be surprised at where there are connections there. It keeps emerging kind of in the background as something really, in a way, connected to a lot of what's going on down here. But there's been a veil, there's been like a cover to that.
Okay, there are two areas that I want to touch on. We have some calls waiting, but there are two areas I want to touch on after the callers. Number one, I want to touch on the idea that at least in some cases, diseases that have decimated large populations may not have been a natural occurrence.
Right.
And number two, something you just mentioned, which was one of the igniting factors of the American Revolution, taxes, and how that may be very applicable today.
Okay.
All right. We're going to the phones now. I have Leo from, is that Century Cable, Leo?
Yes.
All right. Good evening. Do you have a question for my guest?
Yes. I was wondering if either of you, frankly, have ever any idea what number of people have claimed to have had a UFO sighting, say, since the 50s, worldwide. It must be so overwhelming, and the caliber of some of the people involved, the airline pilots and the policemen, et cetera, et cetera.
William Bromley, do you have any idea?
Oh, boy, a sheer number. Don, I think you'd probably do better than me on that. A lot. I'll have to say that.
Would you say it would be a million people?
They're being witnessed fairly regularly. There's a service called the UFO Clipping Service. Is that what it is?
Down in Arkansas, Lucius Farish's UFO Clipping Service.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, Leo, from the figures that I'm aware of, today, and this figure may be somewhat low, in the United States, there is well over 15 million people that claim to have sighted something in the sky that they could not explain. And as far as the adult population of this country is concerned, the last Gallup poll that I remember reading, which I believe was 1987, I'd have to check back at the office, but it's something like 60%+ of the public believe that this phenomenon is real.
That's probably the figure that I would agree with. Because it's such an overwhelming number of people, I find it difficult to tolerate the idea that authors, et cetera, could be out there allowing people to question whether this is a true phenomena. I really don't think that with those kind of numbers that there should be any question in anyone's mind or that anyone should tolerate someone questioning whether UFOs really exist.
Well, this is not unusual. As a matter of fact, tonight while I was rereading Bill's book, I came across something, Bill, that took place at the turn of this century in Wales, which is something that you pointed out, and it was an absolutely mind-numbing direct relation on what's happening today. People were seeing apparitions and things in the sky, which it was, according to the research you did, it was seen as a religious revival, but yet they had their skeptics then also.
Yeah, and the skeptics back then said very much the same thing. They debunked it very, very much the same way. And one thing I want to point out about the debunking, too, which I find very significant, is that it keeps the public debate to the level of do UFOs exist or not. And as long as the public debate is only kept at that level, the more important questions, which are, well, what does it mean? What is it? How does this relate to our existence here? Never really gets asked.
And what are they doing?
Yeah. And I think that's the much more significant question. I think any researcher who gets into it a little bit quickly discovers, yeah, they're here. Now the question is, well, what does it mean? How does this relate to our lives here?
Okay, we're going to have to take a very quick break, Bill. And when we come back, we're going to take more telephone calls and more questions. Leo, thank you very much. Did that answer your question?
Yes, and I like the answer.
All right, very good.
Thank
Tell your
you.
Friends about the show.
I will.
Okay, bye-bye. And we'll be right back after these words. And we are back. Okay, Bill, I guess now we're going to touch an area that probably are going to make many people very uncomfortable. But in your wonderful book, you came across an incident that happened in what we today, I guess, term the Dark Ages, something that probably everyone has heard about at one time or another, a terrible tragedy called the Black Death, something that even kids sing about today, little children, Ring Around the Rosie.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody is wondering what that has to do with the Black Death, call me after the show and I can tell you. But believe me, it does. You indicated that during this period of time there were unparalleled sightings of unidentifieds in the sky. And people even reported seeing what today we may call, I hate to say this, but germ warfare being practiced.
Yeah, I'll tell you, we better warn the reader here that anybody who picks up my book, they may be reading some things that are a little bit scary. What I did was I was researching that era of history because there were certain historical events that were going on at that time that I was very interested in. And as I started reading about reports from that period, I was just amazed at how heavy the UFO sightings were during that period when the Black Death was raging. And
we might add, Bill, that the Black Death plague took out well over a quarter of the population of all of Europe at that time.
Oh yeah, some people say as high as a third. It was probably the most devastating plague that's ever struck in terms of the proportion of people that it wiped out. And there were three actual elements to it. There were the UFO reports, and accompanying those UFO reports were a lot of reports of these visible myths, that is, kind of gases or things that were spreading through the towns that were being hit by the plague. And then in some instances, too, we have the mysterious figures in black clothing who would appear on the outskirts of towns just shortly before an outbreak of the plague. And I've actually collected a lot of those reports, and I included them in my book.
And that is where the, as a matter of fact, we use the symbol all the time, don't we? The famous black-robed figure with a cutting implement, the sickle?
Yeah, that's right, the sickle, the long-handled scythe. And where that symbol came from is that people were reporting back then that these figures in black would be out on the outskirts of a town, and they would have these instruments that would give off a swishing noise, and they assumed that these were like scythes because they'd be out in the field. But what would happen afterwards was that the town would come down with a plague. And when I put those in connection with the reports of the myth, which I would say is the same as the germ warfare weapons that we have today, I mean, we store bubonic plague in canisters, and the myths are often are visible when they're released. So we have that combination of the lights, the figures in black, and then the myths going through the town, all add up, as far as I can see, to germ warfare. Now, a lot of people say that it happened because of rats and rodents carrying the germs, and indeed, they can do that, but the reports of the lights and the myths were far more frequent than the reports of any kind of rodent infestation the towns were struck.
Well, now we're definitely treading into some areas that would make anyone uncomfortable. But I guess I have to ask this question now: if in fact your research is indicating what it seems to be indicating, what could be the underlying purpose? Now, if we go back into our religious teachings, and in some cases I have to call it like I see it, mythologies, we find out that there is a universal thread that runs throughout just about every culture and civilization, which talks about a great deluge or flood,
mm-hmm.
Which in fact wiped out most of humanity if we believe the teachings from our religious books such as the Bible. But this could be pretty much along the same line, couldn't it? A thinning of the herd, if you will.
Yeah, and in fact, you find in the older Mesopotamian stories of the many gods that spreading of disease was actually fairly common. You find it also in the Bible, too. Various plagues would be deliberately created by the flying god or the flying gods.
Well, what about today, Bill? What about with things such as the HIV virus? Do you think that this could be a replay?
Well, it's hard to say. I mostly focus my attention on the older stories. I delved a little bit into the present time, but not a lot. There is evidence that the HIV disease may be genetically engineered. It doesn't really act or behave the way a normal virus should if it was just a natural mutation. I'll be honest with you, I haven't done enough research into it to say definitely one way or the other.
I had Dr. Robert Strecker on here a number of weeks ago, and we talked strictly about the HIV virus. And he's of the opinion that, without a doubt, that it is engineered.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. The way it erupted suddenly, I think it broke out in connection with a couple of vaccination programs, didn't it? One in New York and one in San Francisco. Yeah, that's right. And then after that vaccination program, it started breaking out. And I think it was a smallpox vaccination program in Africa, and HIV broke out just shortly after that program.
That's correct. Bill, we're going to have to take another break. And when we come back, more conversations with my guest this evening, William Bromley, author of The Gods of Eden. If you'd like to speak to Bill or myself, and you're in the 818-213 or 310 area codes, you can reach us by calling. We are back with William Bromley. And Bill, we have a gentleman in Burbank calling. We have Bert in Burbank. Good evening, Bert.
Hello, folks. Bill, it's good talking to you. I have had your book over on my desk for a couple of months. Unfortunately, have not had a chance to read it, but interestingly enough, right before the show, my friend Leota and I began to talk about something that you speak of, and that is the snake in religious history and history throughout the world. And I'd like to get a little more background on what you found out and then possibly postulate a little theory of my own.
Okay, sounds like an interesting exchange. Now, the snake was a symbol initially that represented a brotherhood that was involved in methods for achieving spiritual salvation. And it later became a symbol that was frequently used in many secret societies that I discussed all the way up to the modern time. The snake also was a symbol of one of the old Mesopotamian gods, one of these extraterrestrial gods that Zechariah Sitchin believes was one of these ETs flying around and involved here in human affairs. So those are really the two major meanings that I found to that symbol, and in fact I kind of trace the use of the snake symbol throughout history up to close to the present day.
Now, Don, I don't know whether you're anticipating what's to come here, but I've always found it extremely interesting, so many abduction reports that describe ETs of some type, mostly grays, with an insignia on their chest, usually within a triangle, and has been...
You're talking about the flying serpent.
You bet. And
which also is an emblem of Quetzalcoatl, isn't it, Bill?
That's right.
Yes. So now, putting, and of course, a theory being exactly that, with no proof, it was interesting about... the initial goodness of the serpent, eventually, especially in the Garden of Eden, then becoming a bad symbol.
Well, he kind of got a bad rap through the ages, Bert. Now, if I might interject, Bill, and I'm sure you're already aware of this, but let me interject, and this was something that Zechariah Sitchin touched upon on his appearances on this program. And that basically was, according to the Sumerians, the Mesopotamians, the visitors that came down to Earth were in several factions. Is that not correct, Bill?
Right.
And the one faction was led by, and I'll tell you, correct me if I mispronounce this, but Enlil. And
that's
the
close
other
enough. I'm not sure I can pronounce it any better.
The other was led by Ea.
Oh, Enki was the other.
Enki.
Yeah, Ea was actually the same person as Enlil.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay, well, you see, now that's what happens. You blew my cover. But be that as it may, Enki and Enlil, or Ea, these were of two different factions, and the one, Enki, was a friend of mankind, and the other one wasn't too happy with him. And the Enki was also the same as the Greek Apollo, was it not? The giver of the gift of many things to humankind, including fire and knowledge in various areas.
Uh-huh.
And this was where the snake came from, was it not?
Yeah, the snake was a symbol of Enki or Ea. And going back to what Bert was saying also is that initially, yes, it was a symbol, a very positive symbol, and people in ancient times looked upon it as a very positive symbol. But if you read the Bible and the way they translate the story about the war between the two factions that Don's talking about, is that the snake was defeated, but if you look at history, the symbol and the organizations related to the snake have continued to exist, except in a very corrupted form. And so actually it became a negative symbol, I think, for good reason. Many people see it as a negative symbol, and I think it should be viewed that way within that context, although it began as a very positive symbol. It's just that it changed over time.
Well, the AMA still uses it.
Right.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, the old practices that were represented by the snake symbol used physical healing through spiritual means. And so physical healing was also identified with the symbol of the snake, and that was then picked up by the AMA, so they still use the snake as a symbol of healing.
And the knowledge representation, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Now, again, the specific, it's interesting to me to, from out of nowhere, seeing these supposed beings with insignias, and if we can trace the goodness to the badness, to something, the abduction phenomena, a lot of people saying, well, the UFOs and the people are here originally to help us, and then now it has transitioned into that particular point where they're looking like they may be quite negative beings. So I'm wondering if there's a parallel in history with something like that.
Yeah, I think there is. If you look at, if you trace, like I said, the symbol of the snake and look at the transition that it makes, it made. It's like, you know, a good organization gone bad, and we've had to live with the bad now for quite a while. And that's how I would view it, essentially, in very simple terms.
Very good, folks. It's wonderful listening to your show again, and be talking to you soon.
Okay, Bert.
Thanks, William.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah.
My guest this evening is William Bromley, author of The Gods of Eden. And just like it says on the cover, it's the chilling truth about extraterrestrial infiltration and the conspiracy to keep humankind in chains. And that's a pretty heavy-duty concept. We have Steve from Mission Hills calling in. Good evening, Steve.
Hello. I wanted to find out, I understand you made a correlation between the old days where you had the, the black-robed men with the gifts.
The Dark Ages.
Talking about that particular aspect of the Black Plague, where they showed, evidently he has some reports dating back to that time. I assume that correlates the Black Plague, and at the same time that people were on the outskirts of town, so to speak. And I wanted to know, and you made a correlation with the AIDS virus with the WHO organization, which I agree with, in Africa, and I guess that happened in San Francisco, the same type of...
Right. So what is your question, Steve?
Question would be, is there a correlation between the two? Is that a correlation where you have a manufactured disease with AIDS, which I assume is a hypothesis or perhaps proven, but also is that a correlation with the Black Plague back in the old days, meaning that you were stating that it came from outer space or from some other being for the Black Plague.
Okay, Bill?
Yeah, I was just going to remark maybe on one thing. In both instances, you have apparent evidence of that these diseases were deliberately introduced in some way. Now, in the medieval Black Death, I talk about that it seems to be related very strongly to the UFO phenomenon. As to the present time, I don't see that direct connection, but again, I haven't researched it strongly enough to know one way or the other, but I do see possible evidence that both were instances of a deliberate infliction on the human race of this type of thing. But what's one thing that is interesting, too, if you look at some of the things that these secret societies back well before the century and or early in the century and the UFOs were said to have been doing to the human race has been done more recently by like military and intelligence organizations, for example. That I guess that's the main suspect for HIV for those people who hypothesize that it's deliberately induced, that it was created as a military project. And somebody showed me a thing that said that in the congressional record that, in fact, the military did ask for a funding for a new type of disease that would destroy the immune system. That was before HIV broke out.
That was back in 1970, Bill.
Yeah, okay. And I'm not sure if that funding was given or not, but the same thing also I talk about, they mentioned in some of the older writings about electronic emanations, and this is something, actually, no, this comes from the 1930s. In one of these organizations, one of these secret societies, I talk about the manipulation of the human race through kind of these electronic machines that affect large areas. It sounds pretty wild, but in fact, this has happened in our own time. It was on NBC Magazine with David Brinkley, a television show a number of years back, where the Russians were actually doing that to us.
You're talking about psychotronics.
Exactly. So there's been kind of a transition where we have alleged reports of these types of things connected to the UFO phenomenon earlier with disease and psychotronics related to the secret societies back in the 1930s, and now we find these things perhaps being done by some of these organizations that we're a little bit more familiar with. Now, what the connection is, I can't tell you for sure because I haven't researched modern day that much. So I'm just kind of pointing out basically as perhaps an avenue of research for somebody else to go ahead and follow up on. There might be something there that might not. I don't know, but I'm just kind of remarking that I've seen that connection a little bit.
Okay, gentlemen, we're going to have to take another break. Steve, thank you for your call. Are you there? Okay, he's gone now. Thank you for your call, and we'll be back right after these messages. Let me tell you about some other videos and UFO information. Ian Bramley, author of The Gods of Eden. And if you'd like to speak to Bill, and you're in the 818-213 or 310 area codes. Bill, one other thing in your book that I noticed that you have really pointed out is religious groupings or religious organizations that have a apocalyptic vision. What exactly were you saying there?
Well, apocalypticism, or the idea of an imminent end of the world, I think has been a very significant factor in generating warfare and in perpetuating spiritual ignorance. What you have in those beliefs when you go back, again, the interesting thing is that they do trace the UFO contacts. For example, if you look at the Book of Revelation, which is the one the Christians use the most, it has all the hallmarks of an actual UFO occurrence in terms of some of the things that were happening to the person who wrote Revelation. Some of the older apocalyptic beliefs of Zoroaster, one of the first monotheistic prophets, again, you have a UFO connection there in terms of the old flying gods, and we go back to the type of analysis that Sitchin did as to who those gods were, that they were, in fact, promoting the belief in this imminent end of the world. And you find, interestingly enough, some of these same types of beliefs coming out of people who have abduction experience or contact experience with UFOs today. Very often they walk away with that with some kind of sort of apocalyptic belief, the idea that something's going to end very soon. And what I talk about is how that type of belief, how it actually has generated warfare and how it has become, and it's somehow a self-fulfilling prophecy, in that it stimulates people, you can use that belief to stimulate people into these warring factions, so it really does seem like the world is coming to an end.
Well, do you also see among these type of religious groupings an intolerance for any other opinion or an intolerance for other belief systems? Do you think that this apparently must be a prerequisite of these belief systems to be intolerant? To be assured that your grouping or your church or whatever has the only real true vision
right.
of what's happening.
What it does is it kind of puts pressure on people to believe in that one religion, whatever it might be. saying, well, if you don't believe in us and all these other ones are wrong, well, you're going to be in big trouble when this end of the world comes around, and boy, is that going to be horrible. So you better believe and do as we say.
If you don't believe what I'm telling you, you're going to hell.
Yeah, exactly. And hell's going to happen after this horrible episode of the end of the world.
All right, let's take some more phone calls. Okay?
Okay.
All right, I've got Tom in Madisonville, Kentucky. Good evening, Tom.
Yes, sir. Great show.
Well, thank you.
I've been enjoying listening to you since I recently bought a satellite dish. I can get you now.
Oh, that's great.
I'm excited,
Tom,
about that. Losing some sleep. But
we even have an 800 number, so you're in luck.
Yeah. Couple of things I wanted to comment on. I found it interesting what you mentioned a few minutes ago about the appearances of the men, what we would call men in black during the Middle Ages, when the Black Plague came on the scene. I remember when I was about 15 years old, I had some friends of my family told a story, or at least their parents told the story in their own terminology, about seeing the devil. And they described the devil as basically what I realized just a couple of years ago was a traditional man in black story. Although they were country folk, they didn't really know how to describe it in the terminology that perhaps you or I would use. And I found that very interesting, that they told the story without any knowledge of UFOs or men in black or anything of that nature. But what I wanted to ask you about specifically had to do more or less with political groups like the Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers, Illuminati, whatever you want to call them.
Well, now, you called the right place, Tom, because, as a matter of fact, Bill, have you read The Gods of Eden?
No, I have not.
Well, I'll tell you what, I strongly urge you to go out. If you have an interest in the overall UFO subject, I strongly urge you to go out and get a copy.
Yeah, I plan to do that after this show tonight, after I heard after listening to your guest. And I'm wondering...
Well, Bill, what can you tell us about things like the Illuminati?
Oh, in 15 words or less?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say the Illuminati was one of many secret societies that arose out of these old mystery religions that had a contact with the UFO phenomenon way back in history. And, I talk a little bit about the Illuminati in my book. I don't see it as being quite as significant as some writers do. I think it was just one out of many factions. But I still think it did play somewhat of a role several centuries ago. So I think you'll find it interesting that these secret societies all have common roots going back thousands of years, and those common roots then lead us to the UFO phenomenon back then.
Well, what I wanted to ask you about is, I have thought for quite some time, and I'm one of those individuals that happens to believe that the Council on Foreign Relations and its sister organizations have been in control of our country for the last 40 years, basically in both Republican and Democratic administrations. They end up with most of the appointments. They're in Congress, they're in the media, they're all over the world, and I have believed for some time that they are the ones responsible for keeping, for example, the Roswell crash under such wraps. They perhaps see this as a way of helping themselves gain more control of the world.
Well, Bill, how many people today do you see that have an actual, what may be an actual knowledge of the custodial society? Do you think that there are people presently active today throughout the planet in various governments and religious bodies and so forth that have actual knowledge of these beings?
No, very little, very, very few. And the reason for that is if you look at how it's done, that the ideas and the fanaticism and all that, it's usually created in such a way that the person doesn't really quite know what happened or what's going on. And the veil of secrecy is so strong that I would think that very few people do. I mean, UFO researchers have touched on how strong the secrecy veil is just around the UFO phenomenon itself. So But the secrecy that may exist as to its political significance and its religious significance and impact into human society, I think, is just as strong.
Well, you know, the idea that there may be a third party, a bit not necessarily human, but from somewhere else, that have manipulated nations and peoples and tribes into various conflicts and economic recessions and so forth. You know, I keep coming back to the why. What would be the ultimate bottom line?
Well, there are a couple of ideas. If you read the old creation stories, they talk about how the human race was engineered to be a slave race, that our status was very, very low, that we were really not much better than livestock. I love some of the old quotes of Charles Fort, who wrote back like in the early 1900s about this. He had a similar idea. And so I don't know exactly why it would be continued, except that once you establish a policy, you just continue it over a very long period of time. For example, why does the British Commonwealth maintain the Ascension Islands and some of these things it no longer needs, even though it once did? I could see a similar situation here, that you have the human race created for the purpose of being a slave race. You have these things instituted, these forms of manipulation instituted back then, which they describe in the older stories, for example, generating conflicts and things like that, and simply continuing that policy. Then is there a practical use still for the human race? Possibly. For example, we see abduction evidence that we're still being experimented on physically, that there still seems to be some biological interest in us as essentially something to be experimented on and used in much the same way that happened many thousands of years ago.
Well, Tom, I want to thank you for your call. We still have some other calls waiting, and we're just really low on time, so I'm going to have to say goodbye, but thank you for listening. Tell your friends about us.
I'll do it.
Okay.
Good night.
You bet. Thank you. And, Bill, let's go to line two. We have Randy and Carson that's been patiently waiting. Good evening, Randy.
Hi. I'm curious. You had made a remark earlier this evening about the Russian electronic warfare that was...
psychotronics?
Yeah, psychotronics, right. I was curious, what did that consist of Tesla-type experiments, or was it... something which I had a member of, it was about maybe 7 or 8 years ago, listening to Gene Scott on one of his weekly tirades over the local radio station here in the LA area, and he was mentioning about long-wave experiments done by our military in Australia and some other places.
Yeah, Randy, I'm not an expert by any stretch in that particular area. I don't know if Bill may know some more, but I believe... it's a combination of Tesla-type technology as well as extrasensory perception and perhaps telekinesis and other things.
Well, I see.
Hold it, guys. You're both talking at the same time.
Oh, sorry.
What did you say, Bill?
Yeah, the David Brinkley report talked about the use of extra-low frequency waves that they had set up transmitters in the Soviet Union to bombard the West of the United States with those. And in fact, they were going to start using them maybe in schools in this country and in hospitals to tranquilize people with them. So I'm not sure if that's what Tesla did. I don't know too much about Tesla and what he experimented with, but that's at least what they reported on NBC.
Okay.
Okay, fine. Well, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt either, Don.
Oh, no, that's quite all right.
Sometimes it's a little hard to hear the other side from my end here. I'm sorry I interrupted.
Hope you enjoyed this edition of Don Ecker Live.
Guys, that was Larry King. He's saying we ran out of time.
Uh-oh. Well, I wanted to continue this conversation because it's quite interesting, especially with all the violence and increases in crime in certain parts of the world. It just makes you wonder if someone is still continuing with these.
Absolutely, Randy, and I'm going to ask Bill if he would be gracious enough to return. Thank you for your call, Randy. Keep listening. Bill, we are out of time. That's it for another week. Hang on a second, and I'll talk to you right after the show. Next week, we are still trying to get Travis Walton on. I'm going to be talking to the folks at Paramount tomorrow. The week following that, and I'm sure there are a lot of you out there that are going to be interested in this, we have Phil Klass, the arch skeptic debunker of all UFOs, is going to be a guest on this show, and that should be very interesting. And the week following Phil Klass, will be Stanton Friedman, nuclear physicist and renowned UFO authority. So, I want to remind you, keep your eyes to the skies, keep tuning in, tell your friends about us, and here's the music.